So today is the 21st of February, the Friday, the 26th day of Shvat, Tafshin Pei. And so we are up to Halacha Day of Perek Yud Dalid in Sefer Dvarim. So there is, so right off the bat, in the beginning, there's a pasuk that tells us, "Bani matem l'Hashem elokeichem lo tiskodu v'lo tisimu karcha b'nei nechem l'meis." That your children to Hashem, you should not make cut yourselves v'lo tisimu, nor shall you place bald spots between your eyes over the dead. So there's some kind of avodah zarah connotation to this, and there's a prohibition of cutting oneself over the dead. How exactly to define that is not the topic of today's discussion. What is the topic is that the Gemara quotes this pasuk v'lo tiskodu. In another area of halacha entirely, and that is the prohibition of making what the Gemara calls agudos agudos, making the making separate groups. So the where does this come up? So the Gemara tells us there's a somewhat of a lengthy discussion in Maseches Yevamos. So try to get through some of it, where the Gemara makes a comment in Yud Gimel Amud Beis Tanan Hasa Megillah Nikris Bachara Sar Vishnei Masar Vishlosha Sar Vasar Vachamisha Sar. That the Megillah could potentially be read on any of these days. Why in the world would the Megillah be read on days other than Purim? So that's the first mission of Maseches Megillah, that in order to accommodate people that are not, that there's not necessarily a Megillah reader where they are, so we can read the Megillah a little early. So Rish Lakish makes the comment, I'm not Rabbi Yochan, Ikre Khan, Lotis Godu. But wait a second, aren't we going to have Lotis Godu, Lotasu Agudus Agudus? That's going to be made into separate factions. So the Gemara says, wait a second, how Lotis Godu, that's used for its own section. I mean, why are you learning out from Lotis Godu not to make factions of different factions of Jews? Well, that's the problem. Don't cut yourselves is the way it's translated here. So the Gemara uses that to learn out a unique halacha of not to break yourself up into groups, not to break yourself into groups. So the Gemara asks, the Gemara uses that for a specific topic, a specific prohibition of lo tiskodu, of not making cuts to yourself, not to inflict wounds over a person that is dead. So the Gemara does a grammatical thing where it says, well, it could have then said lo tiskodu. Lo sigo de do. Why does it say lo sisko de do? What are we learning out from the extra tough? So from there we learn out that you're not going to do what we're saying, break yourself into various factions. So then the Gemara says, well, maybe that's the halacha then. Maybe that, how do you know, maybe that's what the pasuk is really talking about. How do you know that it's also talking about the idea of not wounding oneself? So the Gemara says, oh, because if that was the case, it would have said lo sagodu. Why lo sisko de do? So therefore we would learn out both halachas. So fine. So so that's how the Gemara learns it out from this. Then the Gemara gives a couple of examples of this. Rish Lakish says that what about the following mission? Malkum shenog lasos melach marayusach amachatzos osin. Malkum shenog b'shelo lasos ein osin. That there's a mishnah in the Maseches Pesach that talks about prohibiting work on erev Pesach, even before chatzos. So there's an idea of not doing work after chatzos, which is an interesting thing. I mean, that's actually a real halacha that applies to Zman Hazeh, that one is not supposed to do malacha after chatzos and Erev Pesach. So what does that mean? It really means the laws of Chol Hamoed apply, even though it might be, if people are unaware of this, it's sort of a chol, which ends up happening. I mean, because everybody's really just preparing for Yantif and prepared. So laws of Chol Hamoed are applicable during the time of Erev Pesach, for the most part. So the... So what about this idea of not doing there, but we see this various factions about what about earlier in the day? So Reish Lakish responds by saying, well, I only talked about Isurim, meaning actual halachos such as Megillas Esther. And you're talking about Minhagim? So Rav Yochanan responds by saying, well, wait a second, that's not a halacha, but we learn that Beishamai Osrim Yisrim, meaning they actually had machlokas about Beisham Beis Hillel. But so Reish Lakish, so anyways, Reish Lakish responds by saying, Hasamaro Omer Malacha Hu Delezi. He'll just say, oh, he doesn't have work to do, meaning it doesn't create these various factions. So it gives some other example. Actually, then it gets into the issue of that why it's being discussed in Maseches Yevamos in the first place, and that is that the Shammai and Bisila had different positions as to who is permitted to marry whom. And so, according to one, you would actually go ahead and do Yibum with such a person. According to the other, a child born of such a marriage would be a mamzer, right? So that how does you work to that? So that the Gemara gets into that. Hold off on that, and the Gemara concludes by just pointing out the following halacha. that Abaye makes a comment that when we say lo sisko to do, kigon shtei bati din bir achas. When is that a problem? That's when it's two bati dinim in one city. Halalu morim kadiver be shamay, halalu morim kadiver be sil. But if you have two bati dinim in two separate cities, so leislan ba, that's not going to be a problem because they're operating in two separate cities. And then Rava responds by saying, but wait a second, be shamay be sil, we're like two bati dinim in one city. What does that mean? That they, and honestly, I don't know if they were or weren't in the same city, but they were, it sounds like their personalities were so big that there was a lot of overlap. Right. So it still was a problem. So Rav responded by saying, when we say losis godukum based in bir achas, peleg morin kadiver beishamay, peleg kadiver beisila, when there's one based in, and some of them are holding one way and some of them are holding the other. How could that be? I thought you have a basin.
Right,
well,
right.
No, apparently they haven't paskined on the halacha, and that's what they're doing. They're saying, well, we have a machlokas, and we're fighting about it, and when are we going to decide? Well, we have to have a court date, and then we have to have the appeal, and we have to make sure that the jury foreman isn't biased to one side or the other, right? And you have to make sure all these things are cleared up, so it's going to take a while. So what do you do in the interim? So that's going to be, or maybe the basin says we're not going to punt, we're just not going to make a decision on it. So that would be lead to a problem with Losis Godu. But if you have two real bati dinim in one city, so then you're not going to have a problem. So that is the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos that forms the basis of this issue. Now, this question, if you look from that Gemara, what does it sound like? I ask you, this idea of Losis Godu, is that din d'oraisa or is that din d'rabbanan? So the Gemara seems to learn it out, and we have this like regularly. Is that a d'oraisa halacha or a rabbinic or sort of like just a hinting? So this sounds a little bit more than others that it's a d'oraisa. But the Gemara is actually like working on the wording of the pasuk and trying to indicate that this is pasuk has this letter, and therefore you can learn both halachos out. So there is a bit of a problem with just assuming that, and that is that the Rambam paskins that you would be chayiv for if you do losis godu, if you violate this by causing a wound to yourself over the dead, so one would be liable for makos for that. Now there is a rule in the Gemara, and that is called a lav shebechlalos. You would not be chayiv makos on. What is a lav shebechlalos? When there are various mitzvos or various prohibitions that are learnt out from one pasuk. So in that case, it sounds like they could have the Gemara might. The classic example of this is a pasuk lo sochlu al adam, that you should not eat on blood. So what does that mean? So the Gemara comes up with six things that has to do with. And they don't necessarily have to do with each other, but six: don't eat before davening, don't eat without I guess without doing. I don't remember what they all are, what the other ones are, but. The Gemara says you're not going to get makos for them because that's what they call a lav shebechlalos. So if that's the case, here is also seems like a lav shebechlalos. Seems like from the same word we're learning out multiple prohibitions. So why would one be subject to makos on that? So the Kesef Mishnah asks that question. Where is that? Oh, it's in there. Yeah, there it is. V'im tomer heyach, says the Kesef Mishnah, v'im tomer heyach lo ka hamagadid atzmo, d'hal lav shebechlalos hu, kamo lav d'lo tochlu al adam, like that example in Sanhedrin. V'yiv shlomer, so he answers, d'lo dami, no, it's not the same. D'hacha ikar halav yadanu, shehu shelo nigdad atzmenu, el shiraba hakasuv gam shelo lasos agudos. Aval d'lo tochlu, he says, because there really is a main prohibition there. Meaning it's clear. If I were to ask you, what's the din d'oraisa? What's the iser d'oraisa of lotus go to do? So I say, come on, the context of the pasuk is clearly talking about cutting oneself. So that clearly is the frontal prohibition, so to speak. Right? What about a secondary prohibition? Then yeah, we can also learn out this idea of losis go, of not breaking oneself up into various groups. But that would not then be an issue of lasha b'chalos. And therefore, one would be liable for makos on it. Does that mean that losis go to is din d'oraisa? It's a little question, right? It's questionable according to that. So I think many assume that it is, that the idea of not breaking one's up is a d'oraisa, or I perhaps might say at least a certainly a Torah imperative to do one's best to not break up into various groups. However, there are those that say that no, that it's an asmachta, and it's not really derech drash ba'alma, and not necessarily to be taken as seriously as a din d'oraisa potentially would. So it's a bit of a question whether it's a d'oraisa or not. There are ways of resolving the issue of saying that los iskodu is wounding oneself is the real d'oraisa, and the los iskodu is a secondary d'oraisa. But then you get into, so what is the reason behind this? And in terms of its applicability, bizman hazeh, it's very important. Okay, what are we trying to avoid by prohibiting this type of breaking up? So the Rashi says, the nira kenoagin beis toros, that there is going to be an image problem, right? It's going to look like there's two distinct Toros, Kishon Kfarmes and Megillah B'yom Knesiv, Iris Gedolz B'yodal M'kafim Chomon, the Tesvav. That looks like he's talking about the Megillah issue, that some people are reading it on the 14th, some people are reading it on the 15th, so it looks like there's two mitzvahs, right? What's going on here? What are all these people doing differently from one another? So that is the position of Rashi. Rambam, however, says something else. The Rambam, in the very end of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, so he quotes this idea as part of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, and then adds in, Ubechlal Azharazu, which actually sounds like it's a Doraisa, including in this prohibition is, Shelo Yushnei Batidin and Bir Echad, Zenoi Kiminagzeh, Zeminakiminagzeh. Why? We'll get back to that in a second, because if you caught what I read very quickly, the Rambam seems to be going against the Gemara. But we'll get back to that in a second. But he says, why? Because this will lead to major machlokas and major disputes. The chasuv lo tiskodu lo tasu agudas agudas. The pasuk says lo tiskodu, don't break yourself into groups, don't break yourself into multiple groups. So that's the problem. The problem is that it's going to lead to significant machlokas. Right? We got that, right? So if everybody's acting, some people are not doing work this way, some people are not doing work that way, some people are reading Megillah this way, some people are doing Megillah the other way, so it's going to lead to issues. So now how does that then play out, Bizman Hazeh? Right? How do we bring that from the Gemara into our modern-day situation? Because in this building, right, on Shabbos, there is a Sephardi minyan and there's an Ashkenazi minyan. Right, in many shuls, there's a Sephardi minyan, there's an Ashkenazi, there are people, even if it's one minyan, so there's Sephardim who are davening perhaps one way, we'll see if that's okay or not, and Ashkenaz is davening another way. If you look at people's tefillin, right, so their tefillin, some people have their knots done one way, some people have their knots done another way, some people wrap inward, some people wrap outward, right, so what is that considered a problem? Right, then you get into citywide things, and some people are machmir and some halachos, some people are mekil and other, etc. In fact, I told Sam that I promised him that this was a two pasuk halacha day. So if you look later on, not really two psukim but two rashis. If you look later on in pasuk chaf aleph in this parak yidal pasuk chaf aleph, the pasuk says lo suchlu kol nevela lager shebisharachat itnena ve'achla u'machor lenachri, that you shouldn't eat nevela, give it to geirim that live amongst you. And eat, and they'll eat it or sell to a nachri. So Rashi makes the comment there. Lager shebisharecha. Where is it? Ki am kadosh ata laHashem. Kadosh es atzmacha b'mutalach, because you're a sanctified nation. Sanctify yourself, which that is permitted to you. And then he adds in dvar mahamutarim v'achirim noagim behem iser. Things that are mutter and other people assume is aser. Al tatirim b'fnehem. Don't show it in front of them. I mean, don't try to. Now, who's that? Now I'm looking at it again. Who's it telling to whom not to do it? Is it telling the mutter people to not, right? Don't go in front of the Chalav Yisrael people and show off how you're eating an Entenmann's donut and eating Breyer's ice cream? Or is it going to the Chalav Yisrael people and telling them, you can have this ice cream, but I'm going to not have that ice cream or something like that? I'm not sure if I'm quickly looking at it right now which way the medrash is going. It could very well be going in both directions. So one perhaps nafkamina between. So there, you sort of have this machlokas Rambam and Rashi. Rambam is clearly saying it's a way of avoiding machlokas. Rashi says you have an image problem, right? It's just going to look bad if people are doing different things. So which one is, so to speak, more inclusive, and which one is more exclusive? I mean, who's going to prohibit more things, Rashi or the Rambam? What do we think?
One who's willing to eat stam, he's more
No, but I'm saying in terms of our social realities that we have to deal with, right? So who's going to look at, come in, who's going to have more of a problem of the way our shuls and communities are running Bezman Hazeh? Right, Rashi or the Rambam?
Well, I thought they were saying the same thing, that they were saying not to have too many arguments.
Well, they're saying you can't have different activities going on, but they're giving different reasons. Rashi say because it looks bad. You're going to an onlooker is going to look at this and say how
chaos.
It looks like there's two different Torahs. It looks like they're right. Mm-hmm. That's one issue. And then Rambam says no. Our problem is that we're attempting to avoid machlokas. We have to avoid machlokas. So who is who's going to have a bigger problem with the way our community is run today?
Rambam.
I think why? I think the opposite. But you can go first.
How many? Say appearance. Who's going to go? What kind of guy was going to come in and notice what's going on in the show?
Well, it's not necessarily a guy, a newspaper reporter from the Philadelphia Inquirer showing up. We're concerned about anybody. Meaning, it doesn't look great. Perhaps it doesn't look so great that people are doing different things. Meaning, half the people are sitting for Kiddush, half the people are standing for Kiddush. Right, so we could say, well, we understand why, and this is a machlokas, and different people have different perspectives. Like, okay, but you look at this, like, it's hefker, right? It just looks odd, right? As opposed to the Rambam seems to have a different threshold. The Rambam doesn't seem to be bothered if it looks strange. He just wants to make sure nobody gets upset about it, right? So it seems like Rashi would be more restrictive. Rashi would come in and say, how could it be that you have a minion downstairs doing one thing, a minion upstairs doing something else, right? The Rambam would say, well, it's good. This way, you keep them apart from each other, right? And this way, they're not going to have a fight, right? And it's been going on this way for a while, and nobody seems to have a problem.
But who's Rashi concerned about in terms of appearance?
I think Rashi is concerned with anybody. I think.
But the possibility of that being an issue, as opposed to the possibility of a bunch of yidden having machlokas, is no comparison.
No. But Rashi sounds. It's almost like a Marisayan issue with Rashi. That Rashi is saying, it's not a good look. It's not that, someone's going to think we're terrible. It's that it's not a good look. And Rashi's just, and it looks like there's two different perspectives. Rashi's going to be more into trying to string things out, and trying to figure out what we're going to do
as
a community.
He's not concerned about machlokas.
No. So I would say Rashi is, I would say Rashi's more strict than that. That's what I think. Rashi's more strict.
Rashi,
we can't have different things going on at all.
Yeah.
While the Rambam is saying, okay, as long as everyone's okay with it, so we're not going to have as big a problem. By the way, I would point out that it almost seems to be their opposite. It's almost their opposite halachos in terms of how they think about machlokas in general. Right? How do we think about the idea that there's multiple positions within Judaism think of a good machlokas between the two possibilities. What? Right, so Tulim and Chol Moed is like the paradigm for this. We'll get to that shortly. But it's not the best. That would work. Okay, why? What do you want? What's your example?
The women rabbis that are being ordained by.
We're talking about a practice. I'm not sure that that's.
Something that's legal. That's not exactly legal.
Tefillin's a good one. Okay, all right. All right, so tefillin is the classic example of this, because tefillin on Chol HaMoed, the people come in, and they see people aren't. So is that, and that's like a legitimate machlokas, whether to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed or not. To pull it back out of that a little bit, just you see every day that people wear their tefillin in different ways. So how do we... So tefillin, the tefillin, wearing tefillin different ways, it's unclear how much of it is ma'akiv and how much isn't. I mean, just because people tie their things one way or the other way, it's not really, if you learn Hilchos tefillin, it's not that big of a deal, right? It's just kind of like, what's the best way to get it on your arm? And this happens to be the way my father did, is this the way I'll continue doing it? The knots on the back of the head is a little bit stronger. Let's do the following. How about, even though you're not going to be able to see it, but the different ways parshios are written, whether ksav ari or ksav bis Yosef, so something like that. That's a legitimate machlokas. So how do we think about the fact that there's machlokas? Do we think about it that, well, half the world is doing it right and half the world is doing it wrong? Or do we say, come on, you're driving me crazy here, how could that be? Or do we think about it as, well, there's different legitimate approaches to how to approach these things. So that sounds a lot better, but that probably is a machlokas rishonim. Right, that probably is that goes back to the Rambam and there's a famous Ritva about this in the Bali Tosfos. The idea, and it goes back to the Gemara where the Gemara talks about lo b'shamayim hi. Right, that Gemara is sort of the starting point of this. That there's a machlokas, and the God seems to indicate one way, and the rabbis say no, we're going to do it this way. Right? How do you understand that Gemara? So the general from the Sephardic approach amongst like the Rambam, Rav Yosef Karo, that group is there's a right and there's a wrong. And that's it, right? You have to figure out what's right. You have to figure out what's wrong. The Rambam was strong about that. There's a right and a wrong, as opposed to the more Ashkenazi field, the Bali Atosos. Their position generally is that well, there's different perspectives, and there's Shivim Panim the Torah, and there's different approaches. As long as you're doing the best that you can to come with the halacha, so you're okay. So if you think about it, that's almost the opposite of the way we're spelling out this machlokas, right? The Rambam is the one who says as long as you avoid machlokas, you're good. Right, you don't have to worry about it. But the Rambam is the one who holds that there's one way is right, one way is wrong. Rashi would be considered in the other camp, although I'm not sure if Rashi has anything explicit to say about it. But certainly it's quoted in the name of the Rabbeinu HaTzarfatim, the French Rabbanim amongst whom Rashi was a part, of that this idea of that there's, I don't want to say multiple truths, that in terms of halacha, that there could be multiple approaches, that everyone could be all right. Rashi is the one who says, yeah, but in each community, you got to go only one. You can't have this multiple idea. So that's something to think about in terms of how to approach the different positions within those regional.
Yeah, well, is it a major thing? Don't do anything different than the community?
What?
Don't do anything different than the community?
Al Tifer Shmina Tzibur. Yeah, that's great. But what happens if there's a whole Tzibur that shows up? Meaning the Gemara talks about having two Bati Dinim in one city. So how'd that happen? Right?
Who talked about that?
That's the Gemara itself, and that's okay. What the Rambam is quoting. You have two Bati Dinim in one city. So how could that be? All right, it means that there's a constituency for both.
So Rashi is acknowledging that it's okay to have two different, you know, both may be just as correct as other, both ways of doing something. But just to have a unified front, you know, to present a unified front, everybody ought to do it, everything the same.
Right, in order to avoid this difficult luck, yeah. Right. So how do we... let's do this. So the Rambam asked the following question is asked on the Rambam. The Gemara said, as Abayi said, if you have two Bati Dinim in one city, that's going to be a problem. You have two Bati Dinim in one city, that's a problem. To which Rava responded by saying, no. Lotus Godu is if you have one base in one city, people are doing different things. But if you have two of Ashtraya, Shtei Bati Din and Bir Achas, you don't have a problem, right? Two Bati Din in one city, we're okay, because it's recognized that there's two Bati Din and that's okay, yeah.
What's
that? Sorry, but Beis Din is a court of Jewish law, a place where they're making decisions in terms of halacha, yeah. So the Rambam in his recording of this says what? That includes this two Bati Dinim in one city. That's a problem. That's what the Rambam says is a problem, which seems to be...
One's
wrong.
What? You say one's right and one's wrong.
Well, he seems to be passing like a bayit against Rava, which is a problem because we have a tradition that there's only six cases that we pass in like Rava over a bayit. We have the acrostic to remember them, Yal Kagam. Yud, they all stand for different things. Yud stands for example, Yeyesh Shalomidas, the idea of forgetting without, when you lost something, you don't realize that you lost it. Is that considered as if you've given up hope of ever finding it, even though you don't even realize you lost it? So that's a machlokas. It happens to be, my son is learning Gemara now for the first time. Right? Many students start by learning that parak in Bava Metzia, and that's like the first machlokas they learn. Is that machlokas Abayi and Rava, which you end up passing like Abayi against Rava? But generally speaking, we pass in like Rava, except for in those six cases. What are all those six cases? I would just say it's a machlokas what those six cases are. Okay, just to throw that out there. But this is not one of those six cases.
So how many are there really then, if you include?
No, there are six. Everyone knows there are six. This is a question of what the six are. Okay.
There's really more than six.
Choice is more than six. Choosing.
No. No, no, no. There aren't six that we practically will paskin like him.
Right.
There are six. There's a machlokas what those six are, right. But everybody agrees there's only six.
Okay.
Now, how do we work this out? I don't remember that. I think one of the machlokas is in the area of Erevin. I don't remember what the halacha is though that it's revolving about. But anyways, so the Kesef Mishnah asks, what's going on here? Why is the Rambam paskin like a bay over Rava? That's not right. So which he gives two answers. One of them being that he thinks it's a misprint. That's not right. And the other one he writes is, they said it's not quite what, which is a little odd, because he's using the language of the Gemara, but he's saying the Gemara was talking about where there's actually two batidinim, and that's not the case the Rambam was talking about. The Rambam was talking about where there's sort of these two areas out there. But the Netziv gives halacha, where he says that no. That even though he seems like he's going like Abaye, he's only going according to Abaye, according to Rashi's reasoning. According to the Rambam's reasoning, that's a point about avoiding machlokas, you could still have a problem with machlokas even when there's two bati dinim. Now, it's a problem because it's going against the language of the Gemara, so it's not the clearest answer, but the yesod from the Netziv is what we assume like today. That when is there a problem, those go to be passing straight out, be passing like the Rambam, and the problem then is, the question then is, if there is this idea of breaking up the community, is that going to lead to a machlokas, or is it not going to lead to a machlokas? And that's really the key thing that one is looking for. So how do you figure that out, whether it's going to lead to a machlokas or not? So good luck, right? Trying to figure out what will and what isn't. But I'll give you one example where this comes up big time, and that is the tefillin on Chol HaMoed issue. So the tefillin on Chol HaMoed issue is a... goes back. Mishnah Berurah talks about it. I think in Germany the minhag was to wear tefillin. In Poland the minhag was not to wear tefillin. The minhag hagra is to wear tefillin. Eretz Yisrael, which picked up minhag hagra, is I think the opposite. Minhag Poland is to not wear tefillin in Lithuania. Got the German Poland thing, but certainly the minhag hagra is not to wear tefillin, which is why in Eretz Yisrael the minhag is not to wear tefillin. And if you try showing on Chol HaMoed, and that's why if you show up in a shul in Eretz Yisrael on Chol HaMoed and try putting on your tefillin, they might take you and throw you out headfirst through the window. Right? That could happen in Eretz Yisrael. That's a very strong minhag, and they're very tough about it there. What about in Chutz La'aretz? So in Chutz La'aretz, it's like a question, right? Some did, some didn't. I guess Hasidim do. Or
Hasidim don't put them on.
Hasidim don't?
Yeah, that's
unbelievable. Chabad doesn't.
Yeah, but I assume that's other Hasidim too, but I could be wrong.
What?
Chabad for sure doesn't, but I thought Hasidim generally
does. Chabad doesn't.
Rabbi Kaplan, when I lived there, he would secretly put them on. He would go in the back room and put them on.
Okay, so Mr. Brewer and his recommendation, however, is that you should wear the two shouldn't mix, is like a volatile issue, and you should have separate minyanim. So that's what Mishnah Berurah assumes. Rav Moshe has a tshuva.
In the same shul?
Potentially even in the same shul. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I was in elementary school in SAR, we had school on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and like we had two minyanim. And do you go to the tefillin minyan or the not tefillin minyan? I remember I was like in fifth grade. I'm like, well, I don't know, I don't wear tefillin, so I guess I go to the not tefillin minyan. So there are shuls that maintain that. There are also shuls that sort of like advertise when we're a tefillin, we're a not tefillin shul. Rav Moshe does have a tshuva where he does say that that nowadays, and this is sort of a Yisodos Tshuva for this entire sugi, he says nowadays people have gotten used to the idea that there's different minhagim, right? That's like people understand that people came from different areas of the world. People are generally, and this is we've spoken about this in the past, the idea of following your father's minhag is a concept that didn't exist until about 100 years ago. Right, what minhag did you follow? You followed the minhag of the city you lived in. Right, the Gemara only talks about minhag hamakom. It doesn't talk about the minhag of your father. So when did that change? So the world changed when all of a sudden millions of refugees showed up in New York, in the Lower East Side, and other places, and they didn't follow. Oh, what's the minhag in the Lower East Side? I was wondering, right? No, what did they do? They went to the shul that came from their community. So there was the Bialystok shul, and there was, which still exists today, and all these towns and all these Hasidish rabbanim, right, set up their own, try to sort of transplanted whatever they had here. So you could have on one block in these towns 20 different shuls with 20 different minhagim. Right? That wouldn't have happened in Europe. In Europe, it's like wild to say. If Reuven Tirani would have showed up in Poland in 1900, and he would say, hey, I want to eat rice on Pesach, what would they have done? Thrown him out. They would have thrown him out the window at first. He said, what do you mean? My last name is Tirani. And they would have said, tough luck. You're living in Warsaw now, right? And that's the minhag. Your minhag hamakom has changed, right? Especially if you're planning on staying. If you're planning on staying here, if you're planning on going back, it's a little bit of a different issue. But if you're planning on staying here, that's your minhag. But in America, we've like come to sort of like live with this idea that Ashkenazim and Sephardim are different entities, and Litvakim and Hasidish people are sort of different entities, and people have their own minhagim. And like America is the land of the free and the home of the brave, and like we're okay with people keeping their different minhagim. So Rav Moshe actually says that there is not a need anymore, that even though tefillin was like the big holdout here, that no, we're going to have separate minyanim for tefillin. Can't think of too many other examples where that would be. Rav Moshe actually said that that was not necessary anymore. You could have both in the same minyan. However, Max, all right, if you want to maintain the chumrah, in the Art Scroll Laws of Chol HaMoed, in the back of the Art Scroll Laws of Chol HaMoed, it does have tshuvos from Rav Moshe. It does have... And there, Rav Moshe comments that if you can have two minyanim, great. If you can maintain the sort of like bichoshish for the Shita of Rashi, right? If you could maintain the unanimous look of that, so how that would be. That would be ideal. So even though in the tshuva he seems to not have an issue with it, elsewhere he seems to try to be machmer for it. So that's what we do. Max goes someplace else, right? But if someone else shows up with tefillin, so he sits in the back and we're not going to bug him.
Rabbi Kaplan was strict on not having in the same.
Yes. Sorry, Kaplan. All right. So he was tougher. So I would argue, and this I think is the world has changed. I mean, Rabbi Kaplan was the Rav of a neighborhood in a real halachic sense. He was the only rabbi in Beth Hamed, in the Wynwood area, and there was a stronger minhag hamakom. I think nowadays it has broken down.
What was this? Here they daven. I
never
hear sometimes.
In LMS.
LMS. With and without the
film, the same minion. Yeah, it just becomes it becomes hefker to separate it. That's what I've seen. I don't know of too many shuls that are really keep it up.
And then the issue of with the bracha or without a bracha.
With the bracha, without a bracha, with what?
On
I don't know. There are people who say with a bracha. I thought everyone.
Yeah. What is the?
I thought even the tefillin wearers say it without a bracha.
Without a bracha.
I'm a non tefillin wearer, but. I don't know. Ask Max. I don't know. You don't even say a bracha on what?
No.
No bracha on tefillin. Okay.
Some may. I saw somewhere. I'm not sure. That may be wrong.
Rishmuel is in the non tefillin minion?
He's good in tefillin.
Rishmuel, where's tefillin? Really? Oh, okay. Any, yeah?
I saw somewhere that, I don't know the whole statement, but I'm not sure it's right, that some may say the bracha, but solidly that no one hears.
You got one too?
Well,
I'm not sure.
Generally. Okay. There are other the other issues where this comes up is sort of nusach hatfilah, that what does one do in terms of their nusach hatfilah? So in terms of your private shmon esrei, so according to the Rambam, you don't have to worry about it. Right? According to the Rambam, it's a private shmon esrei. You don't have no one's going to hear what you're saying. If you're the issue a little bit more is things that are said out loud. So there, Rav Moshe says, well, if it's going to be said out loud, it's going to lead to this problem. However, it's important to keep in mind that I think Rav Avadi Yosef paskins for Sephardim, that no, you should keep your minhag. So it's the end of this strange situation where you have an Ashkenazi shul, we're telling you everybody should maintain, but if you're a follower of Rav Avadi Yosef, so you're going to follow that psak. He says, no matter what the Ashkenazi rabbi said, I'm going to continue with my psak halacha. So that's another place where this shows up. And yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see, just from a sociological perspective, how this is, how long this is going to maintain itself, of this kind of separate minhagim. Like it works for one generation, then people move. And then you find yourself another shul. And like, what becomes the standard? Like you see in Eretz Yisrael today. Eretz Yisrael, like people have, I mean, there are real Sephardi shuls, but kind of people have coalesced around Nusach Sephard for tefillah. Right? You're not going to find too many solid, real Ashkenaz, Nusach Ashkenaz minyan like we we're also a little off, but like you find the most Orthodox shuls in America, you know, sort of centrist or OU shuls in America, you're not going to find that too many places in Eretz Yisrael because that's sort of how things have progressed. So we're interested to see over the next couple of decades how this maintains itself in terms of people maintaining their minhagim versus becoming more of a mixture together. Okay, anyways, introduction to Los Cisco.
Is it because there's more Sephardim and Mizrahim in Israel than there are here? Proportionally.
No, but most people became what's called Nusach Sfard. Nusach Sfard is different than Nusach Sfardi.
It's a Hasidic.
Right, more of a Hasidic thing. Yeah. Why did it happen there? I don't know, maybe because there's even more movement there. I mean, because the neighborhoods in Israel are not. I don't know enough. about the Israeli sociology to think about it. Mm-hmm. I could think about it more, but to give a good answer.
But you know, yeah.
Sam, do you Kidneys?
Demographics.
Yeah, what's going to happen with Kidneys in the next 10 years? Yeah, I don't know. next 10 years, I don't think anything's going to change in Kidneys next 10 years. There is a case to be made that, but the problem is there isn't. I was going to say, like in Eretz Yisrael, Kidneys is much more commonly eaten, and there's more. I mean, in America, the major kashrus organizations are pretty much going to declare everything for anything that has Kidneys in it not kosher l'Pesach. Right? That's just the way things are going in America. So the minhag is very strongly being held here. In Eretz Yisrael, where there is a much stronger Sephardi influence,
right.
It's trying to be machmer at Kidneys in Israel is a much bigger issue. So from what I understand, I've never been in Israel for Pesach. From what I understand, in the Haredi neighborhoods, they're still machmer about Kidneys, right? I mean, they're no, in the Haredi, in Beitar, right, they're machmir about Kidneys. You're not going to see the yeshivish people in Beitar.
Oh, the yeshivish people, though.
Yeah, are going to be machmir about it. Right, the move, I think, from what I understand, because you see things in the newspaper from time to time, the move seems to be in the Datilumi world, where there is a little bit more openness to say, you know, we're in Eretz Yisrael now, that was a European custom, and here things are different, and it's a different minhag. And anyways, a lot of the Hechsherim are not machmer about it. It becomes a real challenge to be machmer at Kidneys unless you're living in those particular neighborhoods. So from what I understand, the minhag of Kidneys is weakening in those communities, but I can't tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing. All right, I got to run.